Chapter 1, take 2.
Nice.
Rolling.
I don't want to know, I said. I don't want to know! Mrs. Danvers came close to me. She put her face near to mine. It's no use, is it? She said. You'll never get the better of her. She's still mistress here, even if she is dead. She's the real Mrs. De Winter, not you. It's you that's the shadow and the ghost. It's you that's forgotten and not wanted and pushed aside. Well, why don't you leave Mandalay to her? Why don't you go? I backed away from her towards the window, my old fear and horror rising up in me again. She took my arm and held it like a vice. Why don't you go? She said. We none of us want you. He doesn't want you. He never did. He can't forget her. He wants to be alone in the house again, with her. It's you that ought to be lying there in the church crypt, not her. It's you who ought to be the dead, not Mrs. De Winter. She pushed me towards the open window. I could see the terrace below me, grey and indistinct in the white wall of fog. Look down there, she said. It's easy, isn't it? Why don't you jump? It wouldn't hurt, not to break your neck. It's a quick, kind way. It's not like drowning. Why don't you try? Why don't you go? The fog filled the open window, damp and clammy. It stung my eyes. It clung to my nostrils. I held on to the windowsill with my hands. Don't be afraid, said Mrs. Danvers. I won't push you. I won't stand by you. You can jump of your own accord. What's the use of your staying here at Mandalay? You're not happy. Mr. De Winter doesn't love you. There's not much for you to live for, is there? Why don't you jump now and have done with it? Then you won't be unhappy any more. I could see the flower tubs on the terrace and the blue of the hydrangeas clumped and solid. The paved stones were smooth and grey. They were not jagged and uneven. It was the fog that made them look so far away. They were not far, really. The window was not so very high. Why don't you jump? Whispered Mrs. Danvers. Why don't you try? The fog came thicker than before, and the terrace was hidden from me. I could not see the flower tubs any more, nor the smooth paved stones. There was nothing but the white mist about me, smelling of seaweed, dank and chill. The only reality was the windowsill beneath my hands, and the grip of Mrs. Danvers on my left arm. If I jumped, I should not see the stones rise up to meet me. The fog would hide them from me. The pain would be sharp and sudden, as she said. The fall would break my neck. It would not be slow, like drowning. It would soon be over. And Maxim did not love me. Maxim wanted to be alone again with Rebecca. Go on, whispered Mrs. Danvers. Go on. Don't be afraid. I shut my eyes. I was giddy from staring down at the terrace, and my fingers ached from holding on to the ledge. The mist entered my nostrils and lay upon my lips rank and sour. It was stifling, like a blanket, like an anaesthetic. I was beginning to forget about being unhappy and about loving Maxim. I was beginning to forget Rebecca. Soon, I would not have to think about Rebecca any more. As I relaxed my hands inside, the white mist and the silence that was part of it was shattered suddenly, was rent in two by an explosion that shook the window where we stood. The glass shivered in its frame. I opened my eyes. I stared at Mrs. Danvers. The burst was followed by another, and yet a third, and a fourth. The sound of the explosion stung the air, and the birds rose unseen from the woods around the house and made an echo with their clamour. What is it? I said stupidly. What happened? Mrs. Danvers relaxed her grip upon my arm. She stared out of the window into the fog. It's the rockets, she said. There must be a ship gone ashore there in the bay. We listened, staring into the white fog together, and then we heard the sound of footsteps running on the terrace beneath us.
Just a little, what is it?
Content warning?
content warning. I know there was a word before warning, just a little content warning for everyone. In this episode, suicide's obviously going to be discussed, as well as murder and,
domestic violence, domestic gender, violence. Sexuality.
Yeah, all those things. Enjoy.
Mm.
Hey everyone, welcome to Chapter 1, Take 2, the podcast where we read the book, watch the film, and then discuss the adaptation. My name is Maddie.
My name is Rebecca.
It's not.
No, my name is Brianna. Do I have a name? I don't know. We're the narrators.
We are the narrators. We have names. Yeah! If you haven't guessed already, this week's episode is covering Rebecca.
Yes.
The terrace is for guests only.
Monsieur, the young lady will be joining me.
What did you do?
I'm a lady's companion.
Maxim de Winter.
His wife died last year in his entire need of company.
I'm Monsieur de Winter.
What are you doing?
Now you'll see.
Dum, dum, dum. Brianna, we're trying something a bit new this week. Brianna has read the novel by Daphne
du Maurier.
Du Maurier. Lovely. For her students, because Brianna was going into teaching. And you've also watched the 1940 adaptation by Alfred Hitchcock. And now that we've watched together the 2020 adaptation that Netflix has just released. Or released earlier, because it is 2021.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You start.
Well, let me start off by saying that I love the book.
You love the book?
I do.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't read it.
I think I was pleasantly surprised by the book, and I really enjoy the struggle. There is a theory that Rebecca and the narrator, who becomes second Mrs. De Winter, are kind of two parts of how Daphne du Maurier saw herself. So Rebecca represented all the things she didn't like about herself. So the idea that there might be some homosexuality in her, that there was something masculine about her that she didn't love, her husband and the men in her life, and that. It's like, for her, the, like, mousy, unknowledgeable part of the narrator that Mr. De Winter loves, like, when he talks about how, you've lost that look of innocence in your eyes. That's the part that Daphne du Maurier wishes she had.
Right.
And so this book is kind of a way for her to contain the badness of herself, and she kills it off. And then covers it up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a really good theory. That's really deep. I did notice...
and you don't get that from the fucking film.
No, you don't get that from either film. Lily James plays Mrs. De Winter in the 2020 adaptation. And at the beginning of the film, I do notice her wearing pants. And I really like that. But I notice in every other shot, she's the only woman wearing pants.
I don't think she should be wearing pants.
Yeah, I was wondering, because I liked it, but I was like, "Is that would be really out of place."
Yeah, well, I mean, it wouldn't have, it would have been a bit out of place, but like also like less out of place because presumably the war has taken place.
The war?
Yeah, so women started to wear pants after the war because they did manufacturing jobs while the men were away at war. But like, I really didn't like the 2020 adaptation.
No.
No.
Did you like it more or less than the 1940 adaptation? I saw chunks of that one.
I guess the 1940s version is a better film in general. And then 2020 adaptation is kind of loosely a better adaptation in certain regards.
Mm. Do you want to give us a quick summary of the book?
Okay.
So that I can know the major differences that maybe I've seen.
So what happens is we meet the narrator, who is an unnamed character, and she says the infamous line, "I dreamt I went to Manderley again last night," and that's the opening. And her character is quite obsessed with different visions and dreams and like alternate realities, and she plays things out in her head a lot. And she is a companion to Mrs. Van Hopper, and they are in Monte Carlo, and that's where she meets Mr. De Winter, and they begin an affair very similarly to the way that they do in both the 1940s version and in the 2020 version, except they don't have sex. That doesn't happen.
An affair? Is it an affair?
I guess, I mean, if you think of it as a love affair, it's not an affair, but like they begin a relationship.
Yeah.
But at no point does the narrator realize that there's any reciprocation of her feelings to Mr. De Winter.
Yeah.
Until he proposes.
I thought Maximum 2020 is like, it's very clear that he's also romantically interested.
Yeah. And it should come off that way. Like it should feel like she's just like this like little nothing, and she's just enamored and excited to be in his presence, and he is sort of like playing with her because that's the dynamic that they have.
Mm.
And then it should feel like a shock to us and to the narrator that he's going to propose, even though we know that that's what has to happen for the story to move forward.
Yeah.
So does
he propose so quickly in the book? It's only like a week in the 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a wee while. It could be 2 weeks. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Mrs. Van Hopper does get sick, and then by the end of that, she's ready to leave, and he proposes.
Cool.
So that happens. So then they get married. It's really small and like nothing, and then they go to Mandalay. They do have a bit of honeymoon, and they go to Mandalay, and right away, Rebecca feels out of sorts there. She drops her gloves in that first scene, and there's like this big thing, and it's clear that Mrs. Danvers doesn't like her. And then they kind of just set into the role of things, and we see her like trying to find out more about Rebecca and understand her so that maybe she can step into her shoes more fully.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a scene where she goes down to the beach with Maxim, and the dog gets away from her, and then she finds the cabin, and she meets the
Bean,
or Tom.
I think it's Bean.
Bean, the like simpleton who kind of lives on the grounds, and then there's the scene where she breaks the figurine, and she gets caught, and that plays out pretty much the same. There is a ball. The ball happens very similarly. There are a couple of things that are different. So Frank is the one who proposes it, and it's other people. Like, it's Frank and other people who come to see Mandalay, because it's quite common in that time, if you have a big estate, to just be open to people who come see it. Yeah.
They kind of show that off in Bridgerton, I noticed.
Yeah.
That people just go to each other's houses to have a view at the art galleries, like that of the houses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then some people propose, oh, you used to have great balls. And Frank, like, Rebecca doesn't know how to plan anything. She doesn't know how to run a house. So she definitely doesn't plan the ball. Frank plans it for her. And all she has to worry about is getting her costume sorted, which she struggles with. And it is Mrs. Danvers, not the maid, who directly tells her about the picture in the frame. And it's a white dress, and she's holding a bouquet of flowers.
Yeah.
And it is Carolyn De Winter, who is a matriarch of the family. And Rebecca did dress up like her. So that happens. And just before that,
So the portrait is someone famous from the family, but Rebecca had also dressed up from her previously.
So. At the very last ball before her death.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And there are two significant scenes that take place in Rebecca's room. There's the one that I read where Mrs. Danvers tries to convince Rebecca, the narrator, to kill herself.
Yeah.
And there is another one, which is represented in both films, but not as sensually as I'd like it to be, where Mrs. Danvers kind of takes her through Rebecca's room and has her touch things. It's really sensual and sexual.
It is. It's very...
like, she has to put her hands in her slippers.
Yeah.
But it is much more sexual. And there is always this sense that the narrator is kind of interested but scared.
Yeah.
The whole time. Almost like a young girl being tempted by sex or the big bad wolf.
Yeah.
Because
I did have... Were we listening to this on an audiobook?
Yeah.
I remember listening to some of it, and I remember that scene and thinking that Mrs. Danvers was very much in love with Rebecca herself.
100%. There's a really famous poem by Carol Ann Duffy that's a monologue from Mrs. Danvers called Warming Her Pearls, which is super sexual.
Yeah.
And I think that Mrs. Danvers has almost like a questionably pedophilic relationship with Rebecca. But depending on your perspective on who's telling the truth and what parts of the story are true, it's unclear whether or not Rebecca was really a manipulative, horrible woman. Or if she was just someone who was thwarting the rules of the patriarchy.
Yeah, because in both film adaptations, Mr. De Winter is made out to be the hero and the protagonist. Like he, you know, in the 1941, he doesn't even murder her intentionally. Yeah. It's an accident. And then the 2021, he does shoot her, but it's like, Rebecca's like, do it. Like, do it. Like, he hands her the loaded gun and everything. What's it like? What's that scene like in the book? Like, how is Mr. De Winter portrayed?
So, Tim, that book is pivotal. It's pivotal. Or that scene is pivotal. Pivotal in...
Is it pivotal?
Yeah. In the book, because... up until that point, Mr. De Winter has always treated the narrator like a child.
Okay.
And he's very, like, condescending and fatherly to her. He only kisses her on the forehead. Their relationship is, you know, there's an innocence about her in every way.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Joan Fontaine captures that way better than Lily James does. Lily James looks like a shriveling mess the entire film.
A shriveling mess?
Yeah. At no point does she seem innocent. She just seems confused and distraught.
That's really interesting. Because I liked that there wasn't such a big age gap between Lily James and Armie Hammer's character.
Right. There's this theory that about how, regardless of recognizing the setting and how things would have been perceived back then, we still view things and criticize and criminalize people through the eyes of modern decency.
Mm.
And I would say that that is definitely true. And I think that the relationship is weird no matter what. But I do think that there should be this sense that the narrator is sort of playing dress up. And she is, you know, a very young woman trying to step into what it means to be a woman. Like, I was thinking about this today when I was doing research for my class, and I feel like there is this connection to Adam and Eve and the story of the fall of man, where they bite into the apple and you gain knowledge. And I feel like the narrator is Eve before she eats the fruit. And I feel like after the scene of the confession, she is Eve after she eats the fruit.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a pretty good analogy.
But I don't feel like I get that sense from the narrator as portrayed by Lily James. I just feel like I get somebody who's very terrified to be there.
She just seems very confused and like anyone would be if they weren't being told a bunch of information. Like, for me, I always get frustrated with characters like that because there's always this, like, Mrs. De Winter just isn't telling her anything about Rebecca. And so she's filling in all the gaps herself and just making herself crazy because she's like, everyone loved Rebecca. And like, I can never compete or match up to her grandeur. But
at the same time, she should seem infatuated with Rebecca because she is. Because Rebecca is who she wants to be.
Yeah, that didn't come across.
And I don't feel like that comes across.
No, it didn't come across.
In the other film.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And it's interesting because she sort of bypasses the sexual awakening that Rebecca's character epitomizes and goes straight to a motherly character in the book.
Yeah.
So
to take care of
Mr. De Winter. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. The dynamic really shifts after that conversation. I actually quite like this dynamic because it's really nice me just having, like, even though I heard and read some of the book, just watching the films and seeing how different it is. Like, I don't have the muddling of the characters overlapping from reading the book.
Hmm.
So it's kind of interesting hearing how that was done from you who experienced both.
Yeah. The book is, like, it is so good and it's so beautifully written. I hope I capture that in my reading at the beginning. And I love it. And I love that scene because immediately afterwards you see a switch and Rebecca, or the narrator, grows up and she starts taking care of. And there's even this one line where he looks up at her and then holds his arms out.
Mm. And like a baby.
Like a baby. Like, yeah. Mama, come take care of me.
Yeah, I murdered the lady.
Yeah, and I love that because I totally see a parallel almost with the way that the narrator takes care of Mr. De Winter and the way that Mrs. Danvers takes care of
Rebecca.
And that aligns with the idea that Rebecca is like this almost masculine version of a woman because Daphne du Maurier had gender confusion issues.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that, I hate the word gender confusion, but that's the way that it's referred to. She felt more like a boy than a girl, and she hated herself for it. She hated her inability to fulfill the role in society she was meant to fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think she wrote the character of Rebecca and killed her.
Yeah.
There are some other interpretations. So there's this idea that everyone in the film or in the book is a villain. And that includes so that Mr. De Winter, Rebecca, the narrator, and Mrs. Danvers are all villains, and they are all controlled by Manderley, which I definitely see the evidence there. So Manderley represents the patriarchy, and the reputation and the aristocracy and the legacy of Manderley is what everyone's trying to uphold.
Yeah.
Because that gives Rebecca the ability to be free if she's part of the system, but like maintains sort of like an aboveness-esque about it.
Yeah.
And then Mr. De Winter wants to be part, like is a part of the system, but he's not good at it, which is why he kills Rebecca, because she's a constant reminder of his failure to be more masculine.
But in the book, is she sleeping with a lot of other men? Like, what is their dynamic like?
Yes, I think that she is definitely cheating on him, but I don't know if it's as like, ha 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 ha, I've trapped you, the way that Mr. De Winter portrays it.
In both films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's how he confesses it. Like the way the confession happens, like she's this evil High Lord manipulator, is what he suggests. And he's just this poor victimized man who wanted to be in love and married.
Yeah.
And he didn't.
With the most beautiful woman in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the one thing that makes that I feel like that gives credibility to the idea that maybe she was slightly manipulative. Is that he gets the impression that she's pregnant and not dying.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because that does seem manipulative, because that would be the worst thing for him, is that she was pregnant with someone else's son, and someone else's son would inherit Manderley.
Yeah. Which also plays back into Manderley still overall manipulating everybody.
Yeah.
Because it's like, who's the next heir? Because in the 1940 film, the Mr. De Winter goes with the police officers to the doctor and realize that Rebecca had cancer.
Yeah.
But it is the narrator who goes in 2020, because it makes sense that Mr. De Winter would be held like in contempt.
Well, so in the book, what happens is Mr. Favell comes and threatens Mr. De Winter and blackmails him.
Yeah.
And Mr. De Winter is never fazed.
Yeah.
He's like, you have nothing. You are no one. No one is going to believe you over me.
Yeah, I was surprised that they changed that.
And he calls the inspector, and the inspector comes to the house that night, and it's just the four of them. It's Mr. Pavel, Mr. De Winter, the narrator, and the inspector.
Yeah.
And they have a conversation, and they find out that Rebecca went to see the doctor.
Yeah.
And then they find out where the doctor lives, and they all go together. And I think what they were trying to do is give Lily James's character as the narrator a little bit more autonomy and power in the final scenes.
Mm.
But the problem with that is that when she goes and she finds the letter, she doesn't burn it. Like if they had kept it like with the idea that she was pregnant and she burns the letter, then that gives her, she's the one who saves the day. But they didn't. They kept it in the mode of the book and said that Rebecca was dying.
Mm.
And so she just finds the letter and then goes, here you go.
Here's the letter.
Yeah. And it's like her being there is irrelevant.
Yeah.
And I hate that.
Because the police would have come and found that from the doctor anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas in the book, does something really helpful, which is that when Mr. De Winter is giving his testimony in the court hearing, she faints at the perfect time, which allows him to go away and like gain composure and come back and not lose his temper, which is essential. And then it's ruled a suicide, and it's only reopened again when Mr. Favelle comes to the house. But at that point, it's done. They've gotten away with it.
Right. So it is initially ruled as a suicide and then it gets reopened with the blackmail.
Yeah.
But then is again going back to suicide.
And the narrator's instrumental to that decision by fainting.
Yeah.
So she does play a stronger role in the book. And I feel like in the movie, it's not really successful. And then the ending is like, what?
So, because you told me at the end of Rebecca in the book, they're on the run still.
They're not on the run. Mandalay has been burnt down and they've been displaced.
Yeah.
And they kind of...
So Mrs. Danvers burns it down in every adaptation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're kind of going from house to house because they don't feel connected to anything. And that's in line with the idea that Mandalay represents the patriarchy and they're lost without that definition.
Right.
And they just... They're ghosts. It's not a happy ending.
Yeah. Whereas it is in the 2021.
It's sort of like they're together and they're like, I'm so happy, everything is perfect.
Murder.
Yeah, but yeah. It's not. They're not happy. And Mr. De Winter's sort of ill still with his, you know, if anything comes back to Mandalay or if there are any words that he hears, it's triggering and he goes into a dark place and she's got to coax him back out of it so they can have some semblance of normalcy.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Very interesting indeed.
Yeah. So I would rate the 2020 adaptation as like maybe like a 5.
Yeah. And the 1941?
Also a 5, but for different reasons.
Sure.
I would say the 1941, the dynamic is better, but because of the rules and regulations, they couldn't keep the ending intact. There were rules of decency for film that they had to adhere to. So Mr. De Winter couldn't have murdered Rebecca and then got away with it. So they had to make it an accidental killing.
Right.
So that they could maintain that part of the ending.
Yeah.
And Rebecca, Daphne du Maurier hated the film because of that.
Yeah, because it was only made 2 years after she published Rebecca.
Yeah.
So she was very much, you know, she put this thing out there and then was like, fuck.
Yeah.
I'll go through some facts. The 1940 film had a budget of $1.28 million. Do you want to know what it grossed worldwide?
Yes.
Sorry, but I mean, like, I asked that in a way that I was like, do you want to guess? Not do you want to know?
The 1940 version?
You're looking at my notes.
The 1940 version?
Yeah.
So it was $1.2 million?
What's the budget?
$10 million.
$72,000.
Really? It flopped?
It flopped.
That's so interesting because it wins the Oscar for Best Picture.
Well...
And it's considered like
a select few people film. Decide the Oscars, right? Not the general public.
That's fascinating.
Yep. I thought you'd find that really fascinating. The 2020 adaptation is directed by Ben Wheatley. Just a white English guy. He did do 2 episodes of Doctor Who, though, which I found interesting. The film is 2 hours and 3 minutes long.
There are lots of bad episodes of Doctor Who, so...
No, there really are. Lily James plays Mrs. De Winter. Armie Hammer plays Maxim De Winter. There's been some controversy about him in the media.
Yeah, I feel like we can't talk about this without talking about how Armie Hammer is very, very Maxim De Winter, in my opinion.
Yeah. Kristen Scott Thomas plays Mrs. Danvers and Sam Riley plays Jack Favell. This isn't the first time that Lily James and Sam Riley have been in a film together.
Yes. They're in another film together.
Yes. In 2016, she played Elizabeth Bennet and he played Mr. Darcy in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Which we'll cover at some point, presumably.
We'll probably do a whole, like, Jane Austen season.
Yeah, Jane Austen and write-offs, because there's, like, all these fringe things.
But I find that really funny. I was like, huh, they brought them, they obviously enjoyed the chemistry from that film, and they brought them back together.
The thing is I don't particularly like his portrayal of Jack Favell.
Well, he's not a very attractive actor.
That's good. I agree with that. Yeah, I don't really enjoy the casting of anyone, but I think Mrs. Danvers is fine.
Yeah, she is fine. Yeah, that was the most interesting fact that I found. I couldn't find any budget for the 2021, probably because it was Netflix released. So yeah. It's like you don't get kind of box office, and there wasn't any article or anything that I could find.
Well, I find really frustrating.
Sorry, but the IMDb, the 2021 has 6 out of 10.
6?
Yeah.
That seems really high.
And I looked up the Rotten Tomatoes, and then I forgot to write it down.
Huh. I'll do that. I'm sure it's low.
Yeah.
But
Joan Fontaine played Mrs. De Winter in the 1940 version, and Laurence Olivier played Maximum Velocity.
Oh, like the 2020 version, somebody said that it has all the glitter and glitz of an Instagram story or something like that. And I was like, yeah, I get that.
Yeah, but with none of the substance.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
I hated the ballroom scene. I hated all of it. I didn't feel scary or suspenseful or psychological thrillery.
What it kind of reminded me of was The Labyrinth with David Bowie, and that, but the Labyrinth did it better. But they do that circle thing with the camera a lot, focusing on a central point. And that, you know, in the film it's showing Sarah, who's eating the peach and she's like hallucinating, and then, oh my god. There's so many disturbing scenes in that movie. 39%.
That seems more accurate to me.
Yeah, so...
It just feels hollow and empty. And I think part of that is because I don't think that the director or the producers knew what they wanted to say with this vision. Because a lot of the...
What do you want to say, Ben? Wait, yeah, that's his name. Ben.
Yeah. A lot of the criticism seems to go, why remake a classic? And I would say this is a perfect time to remake Rebecca.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with their decision to remake it. Number one, because originally they couldn't keep the ending. And number two, because right now we are having a revolution about trans and gender non-conforming issues. And I don't understand why they didn't bring that element into that.
Do you think Ben, the director, just didn't know about it?
No.
So he knew about it and just decided to do anything.
I don't think that he felt like it was worth fixating on. I think he was more interested in Mandalay being the thing that connects, the Mandalay is haunting them. The place of it. But, you know, before we started recording, I said there's one thing I think would have made the film a lot better. Like one change that would have made it, like, I would say jumped up at least 15% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I would say... And this would be a deviation from the book, but just in terms of it being a better film overall.
Yeah, I'm ready. You're building the anticipation.
Rebecca, the narrator should have pushed Mrs. Danvers off the cliff.
Yeah!
That's what should have happened.
Of course that's what should have happened. Because I was like, push it.
I think the whole time the film is confused about whether or not it wants to be a romance and go the romance route like it did in the 1940s, or it wants to say no. The narrator and Maxim De Winter are both terrible people and they deserve each other.
Yeah.
And at the end, when she doesn't push her, when she tries to save Mrs. Danvers, it's like, what?
And it's why?
And then at the end, she stares into the camera like she's just won this sexual dominance. But we don't really
get that sense. What you're articulating is perfect. Like, the film couldn't decide what it was. Like, Ben obviously didn't have a clear idea of what he wanted to make. Like, under the description of the film, it says drama, romance, mystery.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, but when Mrs. De Winter comes back and the house is on fire, Mandalay's on fire, and she's like, where is Mrs. Danvers? I'm like, why do you want to know? Like, in the 1940s version, she just burns to death inside Mandalay.
Yeah, and that scene is iconic.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. In fact, there are so many clips and shadows that are beautiful, and Joan Fontaine looks great in the whole film, and I really like that. And the scoring of the 1940s film is so much better than the scoring of the 2020 film. What was that song in the ballroom scene?
What was that song?
So out of place.
And it was like, women are trees or something, and it's like, and we are the leaves. The narrator chases Mrs. Danvers down to the cottage by the ocean, and then she's standing on that cliff, and I'm like,
push her.
Yeah, but I was like, why are you chasing her if not to push her?
Yeah.
Like, she nearly got Mr. De Winter thrown in jail. She's been literally manipulating and abusing you emotionally for months since you came to Manderley. And now you're like, no, don't jump, even though you've burnt down all this wealth and my, like, you know, potentially damaging the future that I have here.
Yeah. And it would have been such a great power grab if we always knew that Miss Danvers was going to jump. And then... And then the narrator steals her suicide out from under her and murders her.
Yeah, they should have done very much like a Scar and Mufasa type of thing. And also, they had an opportunity to kind of parallel the dynamics of the balcony scene.
Yes!
Yes, right? And so, the narrator could have come up behind her and been like, oh, like, you know, don't do this, kind of standing over her shoulder. And then, like, Mrs. Danvers turns around to look at her. And then it's like, she's holding her hands and then she just lets them go.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been...
Like, if she had convinced her not to...
Yeah.
And then pushed her. Yes.
Yeah.
That would have been so much better.
That would have been so strong. That would have been a decision.
Then it would have been... It would have deserved the title of gothic romance for me.
Yeah.
If that was the route they wanted to go, I'd have been like, fuck yeah. All right. I mean, I still wouldn't have loved the film, but I'd be like, all right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And even...
Worth
it. Even the music underscoring when Mr. De Winter tells the narrator about him shooting Rebecca, it is still very much, like, somber and, like, we should be feeling bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he's dark. Like, he shot someone. Like, I couldn't divorce her because of my reputation. I'm like, just divorce her. Like, you don't have to shoot her.
Well, you know, yeah. And, like... The thing is that, like, I get it. Like, I get why he wouldn't have wanted to divorce her. But that needs to be played in such a way. You know, it's like when we talked about Leslie Azan's. So it needs to be played in such a way that, yeah, I get that at that time that was, like, a thing. You know, you know, divorce and whatever. But, like, it needs to be commented on that that's no longer an acceptable reason to kill your wife. It's never been an acceptable reason to kill your wife.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't feel like we get that. In fact, I don't know exactly how the director of the film feels about any of the characters.
Yeah.
You know, and right. I don't know if he sees them as villains or as, you know, villains that are empathetic or sympathetic villains. I don't get that. I'm not sure. Because to me, they're all kind of despicable creatures.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not like Mr. De Winter wouldn't still have been fine. Like, he was a wealthy white man who owned a massive estate, like one of the, like, the best estate in England, apparently. Like,
yeah.
If he had gotten divorced, sure, it would have been a bit like, it would have been worse for Rebecca as a woman, but he would have been able to remarry. It would have been fine.
I agree. I feel like Rebecca's reputation would have been worse had he outed the fact that she was committing acts of infidelity than his. Like, he would have been slightly emasculated, but then he could have built that back up.
Yeah.
Unless you hold the idea that he was never a very masculine person in the first place.
That's true.
And I do think it would have been interesting if they had done an angle where they go, toxic masculinity harms everyone.
Yeah.
You know, including the men. Mm. And if they were going to go making them sympathetic, then they should have pointed out how the patriarchy is oppressive for everyone involved.
Yeah. Well, No, absolutely. Because it absolutely is the coward's way out to murder someone rather than divorce.
Yeah.
Which sounds like... That doesn't sound right, but it is. Yeah.
What do you mean it doesn't sound right? Of course it's the coward's way out to murder someone rather than divorce.
I don't know.
Or if they were going to make him sympathetic, they should have showed the scene in a stronger way with the knowledge, like... that Rebecca was fucking with him.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. I was surprised, like, in neither film adaptation that I've seen, we don't get any shots of Rebecca. We don't get anything, like, kind of showing us her truth, either being manipulative or being, like, everyone saying that she's this thing, but actually she's not this thing, you know?
Yeah, we don't get a sense in either film that anyone could be lying.
Yeah. Like, why is that? Like,
you know, like in Girl on a Train, how there's like all this stuff and then we find out that there are different versions.
Yes.
Like, I feel like it would have been interesting to replay the different scene and leave it up to, like, pick your own option.
Pick your own ending.
Yeah, pick your own ending. Like, you have to decide who the villains are. And I don't think you get that sense. I just think you don't get the sense at the end that you need to decide who the villains are. You get the sense of like, wait, but what?
Well, what I felt when the film ended, I was like, that was a non-event. Like, the film is really pretty and it has...
It is, except I hate Lola James' hair.
You hate
her hair?
And
I hate it in the wrong way.
You hate it in the wrong way?
Yeah.
What's the right way to hate it?
They talk about how Rebecca's hair is beautiful and that's why he gives her hairbrushes. Max and DeWinter gives her hairbrushes as a wedding gift. And that's why there's so much conversation around...
Hairbrushing.
And the scene in the movie, which I thought was actually one of the well-executed scenes, where Mrs. Danvers is brushing the narrator's
so
hair.
So violent. So it's uncomfortable.
Real creepy. And
it's
I love
creepy.
That.
I'm like, oh, are you going to, like... kill her or sleep with her?
But I felt like Lily James's hair distracted me from being fully immersed in the setting of the film. Like, it seemed there was something too modern about it.
Oh, like a modern bob.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is longer in India,
but like it does, there's nothing about it that suggests the era.
Yeah.
Strong enough for me.
Yeah, sure.
And her hair is supposed to be horrible, but I feel like it should be horrible in a different way.
Yeah, it wasn't like ugly hair. It was just done weirdly in an unflattering way. But the hair itself seemed perfectly fine, pretty blonde hair.
I kind of thought maybe they were trying to go for like how children's hair isn't done, like it's not styled, and they were trying to lean that way.
Oh yeah.
But I didn't get that sense. I did get the sense that they were going for like a childlike look for her when she put on her pajamas and the second dress for the ballroom.
Definitely the pajamas thing, yeah. Like, I'm that.
But then the rest of it, when she's wearing pants, that feels wrong to me.
She looks like a cool adult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like she needed to look more like a child for more of the film.
Yeah.
And definitely have that doe-eyed look.
Did you prefer... because we just covered the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society. And Lily James was leading that as well.
I'm starting to feel like I don't particularly feel like Lily James has a lot of range and depth.
No, she's just a bit bland.
Yeah.
I've never really seen her in anything that I was like, wow. Like, you know.
I think I liked her in Downton Abbey.
I haven't seen Downton Abbey. Downtown Abbey, not Downton Abbey.
Downtown Abbey, the 1920s party version.
Because, you know, every actor is allowed to, you know, they don't have to be perfect in every film.
Yeah.
But, and there's definitely, like, Saoirse Ronan, I've seen her in some things, and I'm like, eh. And then most things, I'm like, you're amazing. But, yeah, I've never really seen Lily James in anything and been like, wow. Like, she's a beautiful woman. I often think that. I'm like... how pretty can you be, or attractive, or whatever, for anyone? And it's like you can get away with a lot, depending on how beautiful. Like, how good of an actor is The Rock? Like, if Dwayne Johnson wasn't the building of a man that he has made himself, he's, you know, worked really hard at his body. But if he wasn't that guy, like, what would he do? You know? Like, would he really be in all these movies?
Yeah, I totally agree. There's only one scene in the film where I thought, that's an interesting take. And that was when there's a scene when she's standing by Mr. Favell near the tree. And it's right before he leaves to go meet Mrs. Danvers. And she has this kind of look like, I'm a petulant child. And I was like, this is the most interesting facial expression I've seen from you in the whole film.
She wiped a tear away. That was a really interesting scene. Like, to me, what they were trying to represent was that she was upset that she'd been manipulated, essentially, because he, you know, was acting very friendly, even though, she didn't know that he'd been banned from the estate. Is he Rebecca's cousin in the book?
Yes.
Ugh. That's so weird.
Yeah.
Cousins just having sex. That's incest. Actually... I believe, I don't know why I know this or why I've looked it up, but in New Zealand, I think first cousins can get married and it's not too close. I'm going to look that up because that's creepy.
I feel like the distance between cousins maybe wasn't as weird back then, but also...
Well, no, especially like It's very recently that, like, even the royal family, now they're diversifying the bloodline. But until now, like, with Kate and Meghan, everyone else had been family members.
Yeah. Ugh. I feel like...
It's all I wrote is Ken first, and it finished the sentence. Can first cousins marry New Zealand? In New Zealand, it is not illegal to marry your first cousin. The study he carried out on children born to first cousins has shown 75% were healthy. That's not that... If you can have 100% healthy...
Yeah, but I would say that you would find similar percentages of distance, like non-related people as well.
Well, fun fact.
I would be quite interested to know. Incest is one of those things, I know this is probably like a not super well-held belief, but like incest is one of those things where I don't know, and I haven't looked into it enough, but I don't know if all the, you know, drama about incest is actually a reflection of concerns around genetic issues, or if it's just like... kind of discrimination, like it freaks people out so they don't like it.
Well, they find it a bit gross.
Yeah, and I'm just like, the rule for me is if it's between consenting adults, I don't give a fuck.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, like, do what you want.
And I think there are many rules in society that either don't make sense or don't function in our modern times. For many reasons, like there's so many laws that don't work with the current technology that we have because it just can't keep up. But in regards to, yeah, consenting adults, like we, in a lot of ways, humans, because of the technology we have in regards to medicine now, we have kind of fucked up, you know, survival of the fittest, and we're all having babies, like too many babies. The world is, well, there's so many, like, I'm rebutting my own points as I say them. Like, it's not that we're overpopulated. It's just that resources are distributed equally and equitably. But we are already creating unhealthy people. So it's kind of like, meh, you know? And also, just because someone's unhealthy, does it make their life any less valuable? You know?
But also, like, it seems... I think that if all of us were inbreeding, like the royal family, then there's a realistic... probability that unfavorable genes will be repeated again and again. But definitely, if it's like 2% of the population.
Also, it's like, you know, we're kind of getting off topic for Rebecca, which I'm not unhappy about because it's the films are boring. But it's like, that joke made me forget my point. You were saying about the incest. 2%. No, you were saying so few want to. Oh, like, you know, we're saying, you know, siblings. Because I remember a TV series in New Zealand where siblings who had been separated as children and then as adults met and realized they had all these, like, interests in common. And, you know, they were like, wow, like, I feel really connected to this person. And they were... They weren't married because you can't get married, but they were couples and people were all like, ugh. But, you know, it's still legal in too many places because one place is too many, but it's still legal for children to marry adults. Like, young girls are still married off to old men.
Yeah.
And, like, that's fucked up. Like, that's not okay. Like, you can't... Yeah, it's so bizarre what we have and haven't, decided as a society. We're like, yeah, no, this is fine. For me, it's all about...
In some countries, gay people can't get married, but in some old men can marry young children.
Yeah, and in some countries, you can still be murdered for being gay.
Yeah.
So, and it's like...
So I'm just never sure, like, I don't know if... I haven't looked enough into incest to know whether or not I, feel very particularly strongly about condemning it. Like,
yeah. For me, it's all about power dynamics.
Yeah.
Like, if there is a true, like... balance of equal power between the two or more parties involved, like, Who gives a fuck? Especially what I really like about hugs and sex and physical intimacy is that, like, if it's someone who's also, you know, not that isn't being paid, it's like free and it's like good exercise and it's so healthy for you. And it's like, it's a really good way to pass the time. Hmm. I'm like, you're not hurting anyone if you're having consensual intimacy and sex with other people.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I think it's different when it's like parents or aunts and uncles and nieces and nephews and children. Like, that's different because that's a power dynamic thing.
Of course.
But like, I don't know why we're talking about this going in such detail. I just, cousins?
It's an interesting debate. It's an interesting debate.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, that's where I sit.
Those are our views. We're not related.
I'm really disappointed that they didn't take this opportunity to say something new or different.
Especially about transgender rights.
Yeah, about gender non-conforming or masculine women or or the threat that masculine women seem to pose to masculinity.
Mm.
Like, I think they could have really said something interesting now that there are fewer regulations around. Or even domestic violence and controlling behavior. Like, I just really think there was a direction worth going if they had, like, properly villainized and undermined Maxim De Winter's narrative.
Yeah, I totally agree. And these days, I don't even know that I can really watch and just casually enjoy a film that doesn't have any racial diversity, any sexual orientation diversity, any able-bodied diversity. Like, it's just,
because it's not realistic.
But it's also just,
it's not a reflection of our world.
It's not the, yeah, you're right. It's not the world we live in. And I'm like, this is why, like, this is just a bunch of pretty people causing their own drama, making, you know, oh, I'm wealthy, I have too much time. Like, obviously there's mental health issues that run in wealthy families. That's not what I'm saying. But it's like, do something else. Like, make a movie about something else. Like, find something productive to do with your time. Like, fuck. And but, you know, that's an interesting that could have been the commentary on Rebecca. Like, was she sleeping with all these men because she felt oppressed and she was bored and she had too much time? And it's like, there's so many things that you could have said with a remake, but didn't.
And what I find really interesting is that everyone is comparing the 2020 version of Rebecca to the 1940 version of Rebecca, which I think is silly because, you know, holding the 1940 version up as a perfect adaptation of Daphne du Maurier's novel is ridiculous. It's not. It changes the ending in a really significant way. So there's definitely room to remake it.
Yeah.
But isn't it fascinating that, like, you could almost say the 2020 version of Rebecca is the narrator? And the 1940 version of Rebecca is Rebecca. And the 2020 version is trying but failing to fill the 1940s shoes.
Yeah, you definitely can.
You know, like, I feel like that's just poetry.
That's really good. It's a really good point. So, how would you rate the film in and of itself? In and of itself.
I would probably rate the 1940 as like a 7 out of 10. It's not like my kind of film.
But do you want to watch it again?
It's valid.
Do you want to watch it again?
No.
Then why is it above a 5?
I think that it's unfair for me to say that it's a bad film because I'm judging it by today's standards.
But I want you to judge it by today's standards.
If I judge it by today's standards, I'd give it like 3.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear.
Yeah. The 2020 version, I'd give like a 4.
Yeah. I'd give it like a 2, the 2020 adaptation, because like in those two,
harsh.
I just don't care. Like, it ended and I was like, nothing.
I know. To be totally fair, all week we've been saying we need to record this episode, and all week I've been like, well, I don't want to watch the movie.
What we're really excited to do, like, is our next episode, which is like, I can't. I'm scared and terrified and excited to watch the film. We're going to cover The Color Purple by, not Patricia Grace.
No.
Who's Patricia Grace?
What?
Like, why?
Patricia Grace wrote Cousins.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking about it. But who wrote The Color Purple? Come on.
I'm just blanking now.
All you're thinking is Patricia Grace.
Yeah, you made it difficult.
No, I got it.
No, it's right here.
The Color...
Alice Walker. And it's stunning. It's such a good book. I'm very excited. I've never seen the film before.
It's such a good book. It's really funny because Brie is always like, oh, you know. And what's funny to me is when you comment on how I feel about something and I, you know, because of my behavior.
Yeah.
And you were like, I'm worried you wouldn't like this book, but I know that you like it because every opportunity you get, you're reading it.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah, I'm real glad that you ended up liking it. Like, I know that you really struggle with violence against females in literature, but I think it's such an important work, and I'm very excited to discuss it.
As am I. But in my defense, I would say we should all be more uncomfortable with violence in general. We've normalized it too much, I think.
I don't think that there's anything wrong with the fact that I feel moved by violence, but I feel more empowered by its depiction than I do disgusted by its depiction. Like, I'm so glad that these stories were being told.
Definitely.
Because I think they need to be told.
I'm not saying, I don't want us to shy away from it. I want the truth to be spoken, and I want, I should be impacted. And people should be upset when they read things like The Color Purple.
Absolutely. And I think it is different because there's a difference between, like, rape scenes that are pornographic and they're violence. And then rape scenes, you know, I think that The Color Purple, we'll talk about this more next week, but, like, The Color Purple does it in a really tasteful way that shows the full impact of it, of the action, without making it graphic.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was over the entire period of Sally's
life until the end.
C-E-L-I-E.
Yeah.
Sally. Yeah. Anyway, we're getting too into it. We'd much rather talk about that.
Shall we do
revamp, remake, retire?
Yep.
Hmm.
I've got mine.
I'm unsure. 1, 2, 3,
retire.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because it's always more fun when we disagree.
It is more fun when we disagree. I do, because I really enjoy what you've been telling me about the novel.
Hmm.
And I want to see that. I want to see someone really diving into gender roles and, like, why the narrator is so obsessed with Rebecca and, like, talking about transgender and how that could have played into it. And, you know?
Yeah.
But also, do non-white casting. Like, just don't feel limited by having to put everyone, like, if you, yes, I understand that period pieces are like, oh, but at the time only white people had mansions. Fuck it, who cares? Just cast diverse actors and still, you know, and still tell the story.
I mean, I'm not saying that, I guess, like, for me, I'm just fine. Like, I'm fine if it's retired. I really enjoyed the book. I happily revisit the book because of its beautiful literature and the fact that I think it has more to say than Wuthering Heights does. And I hate it. Like, Wuthering Heights was just like, yeah, it was nice, but glad it's over. But, like, I am just more excited about stories that are being told now.
No, that's valid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Are you good?
I'm good.
Excellent. Thank you so much for listening. We have a Patreon. If you would like to support us, that would be awesome. Just a dollar. A dollar would be great.
A dollar's nothing.
We love a good dollar.
Go on.
Go on.
Do it.
Do it. I dare you. I bloody dare
you. You know you want to.
We have an email address, chapter1take2@outlook.com, all written out. CH1TK2 for our Twitter handle. We got some Instagram pics. We just basically share the posters of the films that we cover if you want to check that out. It's good for updates and stuff, though. And Facebook. Thank you so much, though, guys. I just want to say, what's a good... Thank you so much, folks. That's a gender-neutral thing. We, for the first time in the history of the podcast, which isn't even that long, it's not even 2 years old yet, but we had over 400 downloads in 1 month.
That's amazing.
Prior to April, we hadn't cracked 250, and now we're over 400, and I just want to say a bloody thanks, because that's just a delight. It's so awesome to see the podcast audience growing. You know, hope you guys I keep saying guys. To me, it is gender neutral. I don't know why.
Well, and you know what? I just want to say we're a podcast of the people. So if you have requests, I would do pretty much anything to please you. So feel free to request a book or a film adaptation that you'd like us to cover or anything. Just, you know.
You just want to talk to people.
I do. I just want friends.
It reminds me of Bo Burnham, what you just said. Like, I want to please you, but I hate you. And yeah. It's just like at the end of, yeah, be happy. Anyway, wonderful. Chapter one, take two. We'll see you next time. Tune in definitely next week. We're going to cover The Color Purple and by I Alice Can't Walker. Wait by Alice Walker.
So good.
Yes. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I know. Yeah.